This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, I talk with a team about how lack of leadership at the state level is metastasizing into bad policy in local communities during this Chinese coronavirus shutdown. In our interview, we speak with David Barton of Wall Builders about the push to take away your right to vote on judges. And we'll close out with an Easter commentary from Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinslet. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. Follow me on social media if you'd like to. I'm at TweetTonyMac. Want to get started with this week's news? I've got to do something a little different this week rather than breaking things up. I've got Robert Montoya with the DFW Metroplex. Got Brandon Waltons, managing editor for Texas Scorecard, and Carrie Cheshire, vice president for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Why are we combining everything? Because it feels like all the stories that are important this week, all emanating from the government closing down of society in response to the Chinese coronavirus pandemic, all of these things are kind of interacting, starting at the local level and then how these local policies are maybe metastasizing in the broth of a lack of leadership from the state level. So let's get started with Robert. Robert, over the last weekend, the city of Fort Worth coming out and banning church services, this seeming to conflict with the declarations coming out by Governor Abbott.
Yes, Tony, this is an absolute farce of a situation. Last Friday, we had discovered that the city of Fort Worth had banned all in-person worship services. You can only do it digital. When we had reached out to city council members, council member Carrie Moon said that language is going to be corrected. And then the following morning, Mayor Betsy Price released a video saying worship services are banned, and which conflicted with what she said. And then it became a weird little situation from there with everyone contradicting each other. And she also pointed to the governor saying, and Ken Paxton saying, you know, we're under order from the governor and also from Tarrant County to do this.
Yeah, the interesting thing here is Governor Abbott came out with an executive order, right at the beginning of the month, so about 2 weeks ago, where he came out and said churches are essential services, and it was lauded as, okay, this is exempting churches from local regulations that might prohibit people from worshiping. And yet basically the what I see it from these local folks, they're saying, oh, well, that order that said churches are essential really meant that churches are banned. And so churches are banned. That was the logic of what they were telling people.
Yes, that was the logic. And, you know, they said Tarrant County did the same thing. But despite what you may think about what kind of language coming from the governor, Tarrant County commissioners, you know, forced their county judge to fall back and say, no, there is no ban. We're just recommending people not to worship. And then when we asked the Fort Worth Police Department, you know, how is this being enforced? First, they told us a $500 fine. Then they told us to talk to code compliance. And they said, well, please don't talk to code compliance. Ask the city attorney. And she repeated what you just said. She pointed at the governor and at the county.
Yeah. So, Brandon, let's turn to you. Brandon, the problem here, and there's been lots of calls for Governor Abbott to step in and, you know, set up some kind of plan that would reopen the state as this thing drags on, as we're seeing maybe in kind of some other states, too. But that really hasn't happened yet.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, you've seen an approach where Governor Abbott and you know, other state officials seem to be looking to Washington, D.C. and federal guidelines on how exactly they want to open up. And this has come much to the frustration of Texans who have been dealing with these restrictions for about a month at this point and just want to see a plan from their state leaders.
Well, and to have some clarity, and it's interesting, I feel like we've seen some proposals from other states, liberal states, mm-hmm. I don't know, there's a bunch of Democrat-run states somewhere in
California,
not Texas.
Even, yeah.
Yeah, and these people are coming forward with plans, but so far, Governor Abbott was kind of expected, oh, maybe he's going to come out with a plan at this press conference, but he comes out with the Goldman Sachs loan-a-thon.
Yes, and so now the plan supposedly is going to be revealed on Friday. You've got President Trump and his coronavirus task force speaking with governors ahead of that time. But very, very clear exactly where the guidance is coming from right now in Texas. It's not coming from the governor. It's coming from Washington.
Yeah. Now, interesting, there is some pressure bubbling up from local leaders and from representatives. Carrie, you've written a little bit about some of the state representatives stepping in to say, hey, they're calling on the governor to put together a particular plan to open things up.
Yeah, that's right, Tony. You know, earlier this week, you saw State Representative Matt Krause come out with 7 recommendations that he provided to the governor on kind of a plan to get Texas back to work, asking the governor to come out with a plan and incorporate some of these in that provision. You also saw State Representative Mike Lang, who is not running for re-election to the Texas legislature, is instead pursuing local office in Hood County, but is still a member of the Texas legislature, asked Governor Greg Abbott to pretty much open up the economy relatively suddenly right now and justify all the rules that we're going to continue to have. It's very notable that in Lang's letter, he's actually asking the governor to basically continue waiving all the regulations that have already been waived until the next legislature so that lawmakers can discern whether or not we actually need those regulations. I think that's a very wise and prudent move by Lang and something that taxpayers probably should overwhelmingly support.
Yeah, that's been an interesting point is the governor has stepped in to ostensibly suspend certain laws, and it makes you go, well, did we really need those laws to begin with? Why are we, having these laws in place that regulate people's lives if we can just at the drop of the hat get rid of them? But the interesting thing here is that this does seem to be indicative of more pressure bubbling up to say, look, we've got to move on from this. It's not been as, you know, even though it's been a crisis, it's been something that people, seemingly are very taken seriously. It has not been, factually, at least in Texas, as bad as some of the early prognostications made it out to be.
Well, that's right, Tony. And even if we were continuing to see a lot of hardship and problems and, hospitalizations due to the Chinese coronavirus in the state of Texas, it's obvious right now that the lawmakers have no plan and there's no specified goal. You know, are we looking for zero infections? It seems like that's a very kind of hard hill to climb to get back to work. Okay, do we want actually to just not shoot our hospital utilization rate above something like 75%? Well, we're actually in a situation right now where we're shutting down emergency rooms. So there's been no clarity on what the objective is. And meanwhile, Texans have seen their liberties and their businesses and all of their economic rights completely forfeit by a heavy-handed and clumsily handed government.
Yeah. Turning back to Brandon, interesting, it's some criticism from now a guy who's not an elected official but was, former Senator Don Huffines, pretty outspoken in criticizing Governor Abbott.
Yes, in a commentary posted at TexasScorecard.com this week, former State Senator Don Huffines from the Dallas area, very outspoken conservative, really going out there on the attack against Governor Abbott, specifically for what we've talked about, which is this lack of leadership that's being demonstrated.
Yeah, I think it's really, starting to hit a tipping point where we're expecting to see something more from our statewide leaders, from Governor Abbott. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see this kind of behavior with these radical left-wing Democrats at the local level running roughshod over rights in the midst of this situation. Appreciate your reporting, each of you guys. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At TexasScorecard.com or EmpowerTexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email with occasional updates throughout the week. Subscribe online and find more information at EmpowerTexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, as this coronavirus pandemic and government shutdown bears on, we have had a reminder of how important it is the types of elected officials that we have across the board in our local governments and the judiciary and all over the place, mayors, that sort of thing. It's very, very important. And at this same time that we are seeing how critical it is to be involved, there is a march on the foot going to try to take away the rights of Texans to elect their judges. And I wanted to talk about that with David Barton of Wall Builders. David, you just recently did a report on the risks and challenges, the downsides, the problems involved with what some call a Missouri plan. And we'll get to that. But thanks for coming on and joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Tony. Thank you for having me.
So tell us what's going on here in Texas with our judges. I've been covering it a little bit, but most people probably are not aware that there is a very bold movement going on to say, hey, we should just stop doing what we've been doing, which is electing judges.
Yeah, Texas is one of the states. There are 21 states right now out of the 50 that have some type of judicial selection by the people. In other words, we, the voters, get to vote on our judges. If we don't like the decisions they've made in the last 4 years, we will make a change. We'll put somebody else in there, et cetera. So about half the, 21 of the 50, 42% of the nation chooses their own judges. But there are folks in the state that have watched what have happened in the larger urban cities, Dallas, Houston, et cetera. They become more and more blue. And as they become more and more blue, there's less and less conservative judges elected. And this group says, now we got to take it away from the people in those cities, and we need to just appoint judges there. And you know, quite frankly, I happen to be conservative. I tend to be Republican, but I'm a huge fan of the people choosing who they want for their leaders. I think you deserve to live under whoever you choose. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. But I just do not see taking power from the people. And so as Texas has, we saw it even in the Ted Cruz, Beto O'Rourke election, where they essentially, out of the 254 counties, most voted for Ted Cruz, but the five big areas of San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, El Paso, and Austin, they were overwhelmingly blue. And that was a very close race between those two as a result. So this plan is really to create an alternative where that Houston and Dallas and other don't elect as many blue judges. It's a plan whereby, and you mentioned, Tony, the Missouri plan, which is a plan whereby no elected official chooses the judges, but a council of experts goes out and says, here's the guys we like for judges. We're going to let the governor choose one of those judges, and that will be the next judge we have. So it takes it completely out of the people, out of the hands of elected officials, and puts it in the hands of some commission somewhere. And that's just not a good plan, in my view, from a constitutional standpoint.
Yeah, you know, from a pure politics standpoint, we had all of these Democrat judges elected in 2018 in the Beto O'Rourke wave. Even as he lost the election, these guys were elected to the courts of appeals. And I think a lot of Republicans are going, oh, well, maybe we can do something about that. We can cut the Democrats out of the picture. As this has gone on, it's almost like they're saying, okay, well, you know, you voters, you're just a bunch of dummies. You didn't know any better than to vote. But the way I see it is, I mean, for better or for worse, these people, I voted for Ted Cruz. I'm a Republican. But these people voted for their judges, and they said, I'd rather have the judge that's associated with Beto's party than the judge who's associated with Ted Cruz's party. And I sit back and go, well, who are we to question that? That's their prerogative as voters.
Yeah, for me, parties are not nearly as important as principles. And I go back to what George Washington said in his farewell address. And he said, he warned that the greatest, what he called the bane or the greatest enemy of our country is loving a party more than you love principles. And I love the principles more. I think judges need to be accountable. I think they need to be representative of the people who place them there. I think there needs to be a separation of powers between the branches. And I love those principles more than I love the fact that Republicans should have judges in Houston or Dallas or wherever. So I look at it from a constitutional standpoint, particularly historically. This is one of the things we spend a lot of time on. We, at our organization, we have about 100,000 original writings from before 1812. So I've got thousands of the handwritten documents of Washington, Adams, Jefferson, you name it, right on through. And I appreciate the principles they've given us. The constitutional republic they have given us has now lasted 232 years. The average length of a constitution in the rest of the world is 17 years. I really like what they've given us. I like not having a constitution every 17 years. Therefore, I want to defend those principles. And what I see currently underway in Texas is an attack to set aside constitutional principles for the sake of partisanship, even if it's the party that I happen to be affiliated with, Republicans, is still a bad idea. And it's not Republicans necessarily that are doing it. It's some groups in the state that find Republicans to be better judges and be better on tort reform and to be better on other issues. And Republican judges tend to be better for this group than Democrat judges. So they want to make sure they keep Republican judges. But you do that through elections. As they point out in their website, they said some Texans just don't have enough knowledge to be choosing judges. Well, then educate, spend more money and let them know what the issues are in the election, but don't take their power away. To me, that's just a fundamental violation of constitutional precepts.
Yeah. Now, in you're, you know, kind of a historian and very familiar with the history, the constitutional history of the country. Obviously, in the federal level and in the early states, we had an appointment process. So we see President Trump nominate federal judges. Those go before the Senate, and then they're appointed. And then we got to these elections and started doing elections for judges in states, and that became very common. But then we're now kind of this Missouri thing is something that's a more modern creation of saying, and we just need to put, like you were saying, almost put experts in charge, which to me is very concerning.
Yeah. What happened was when the founders originally designed the country, they gave us what we call the federal plan. And the federal plan is your executive, which is the president, or in 10 states, is the governor, that looks and chooses the nominees. That nominee is then submitted to the Senate for hearings or for confirmation. And if it's confirmed by the Senate, then that person becomes a judge. That happens in 10 states. It happens at the federal level. So originally, every state in the United States, as they were coming in and we were growing, we had 13 states and 16 states and 21 states. They were all using that federal model. But there was a breakdown in that federal model. If you go back to the Federalist Papers, they predicted that the judges would never be strong enough to ever threaten any single liberty of the people ever. The way Federalist 79 described it was the judiciary is beyond comparison the weakest of the three branches of power, and the liberties of the people can never be endangered by judges. Well, they soon saw that that's not true. What Thomas Jefferson had predicted came to pass. He said, our judges are just like other people. They have the same partisan inclinations as everybody else. And he warned that they would accumulate power to themselves just like every other branch does, and he was right. And so at that point, a number of the states moved away from what's called the federal model. They started electing their judges, making those judges accountable to the people. That went for a good period of time, and some people said, well, we don't like partisan elections. Let's have nonpartisan elections. We'll still have judges that we elect, but they just won't identify parties. You just choose the best candidate. And so that became popular for a while. And then in 1948, Missouri said, hey, let's do something different. Let's just have a commission of experts. We're going to choose attorneys. We're going to have attorneys choose our judges. And then the governor has to choose one of those that the attorneys chose, and that'll be our next judge. And so what really happens is you have a small lobby group choosing judges. That became popular because it appeared to eliminate politics from the process. And that might have been true in post-war America, where everybody really loved America and you wanted the best for America. That's just not where we are anymore. There are two different views of what America should be. And to have any specific commission choose judges. And by the way, what happened in Missouri did not stay nonpartisan. In Missouri, they recorded a period of about 13 years through the mid-90s through about 2000, mid-2000s. And while the state vote was about 50% Republican, 50% Democrat, 87% of the judges chosen under the Missouri plan by these experts tended to be Democrats. So it did not become neutral. It became even more partisan than it was before. And that's why states are trying to avoid the Missouri plan now or moving away from it or modifying it. But that's kind of the history of how it came. And it really, the founders' intent was very good, but you just didn't account for human nature. And judges, when they get power, will accumulate that power. They'll implement their own philosophies, viewpoints. We just have a list of records across the nation of these Missouri plan judges and what they do when they get in power. And it's just not a pretty picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think the principle I see here is a recognition that judges are, like other public officials, public officials who are accountable to the voters. And you know, to kid ourselves that something different is to kid ourselves, right? But I saw a really interesting point. I think it was at the Federalist Society state chapters convention a year or so ago. One of the speakers was pointing out that, and we all know this, whenever you think about lawyers, overwhelmingly lawyers are very liberal, even more liberal than the average Democrat. You know, by and large, obviously there's conservative lawyers like me, but, you know, by and large, they're liberals. And so if you put the lawyers in charge, it's kind of unsurprising that if the lawyers are picking the judges, they're typically Democrats, and they're going to recommend liberal Democrats to serve as judges.
Yeah, and that goes back to one of those constitutional points that I want to be able to choose my own leaders. You know, Sam Adams made a comment once. He said, as becomes a good citizen, I will acquiesce and the choice of the people. In other words, I don't always choose for a winning candidate. I did not personally vote for Barack Obama, but you know what? When he won, I said, you know what? The people had their choice. That's who they chose. And I'm going to live under him as my president. And so I don't always win every election that I vote in, but I recognize it's a constitutional process. And I don't want that process changed. And I don't want a group of any people, lobbyists or attorneys or teachers or professors. You know, as you said, Tony, you're an attorney, but you're a conservative one. But generally, the profession's liberal. I know very conservative professors, but I will tell you, overwhelmingly, the academic arena is very, very liberal. But that's all right. Just make sure that I have a voice at being able to do something. That make sure I'm not cut out of the process. Make sure I can make my choices. If I choose to go to a liberal school, that's my choice. If I choose to go to a conservative school, that's my choice. Don't take my choice away from me. And so that really is what this boils down to. And, you know, I got involved in some elections here a couple of years ago in Kansas, because what happens in the Missouri plan, after the governor puts them on the bench, chosen by this commission, they're put on the bench, they then have no competition against them, and they stand only in what are called retention elections. So every 4 years you come up and you vote for a judge, but there's only one name on the ballot for that judge, and that's the judge that's sitting there. So nobody's running against him. Nobody points out the goofy decisions he's made over the last 4 years. There's nothing. And so it's not surprising that over 99% of retention elections, the judge gets reelected. It becomes a lifetime appointment, because that's the good thing about contested elections. I can point out how you voted last week in the legislature, and if people don't like that, they'll choose me. Without a contested election for judges, there's nobody to point that out. And so when we were involved in this Kansas retention election, there is a clause in the Kansas legislature or in the Kansas Constitution that says the legislature shall make suitable provision for finance and education interests of the state. So the legislature is in charge of financing schools. The Missouri plan judges said, well, legislature really means judiciary, and we, the judges, are going to take over how the schools are funded. They literally put themselves as the judiciary in charge of financing the schools of Kansas, even though the Constitution says the legislature shall make it. And that's the kind of nonsense, and you have no accountability, because there's nobody there to point out the stupidity of the decisions they make.
Yeah, it all of these changes that are proposed seem to be plans to say, let's take less control from take control away from the people, and let's give them less information when they do make decisions. I think you're right that it's the principles should trump your kind of immediate political expediency. I think that's a really good message there. To wrap up here, we're running out of time. Tell folks who want to read the study that you all put out about the Missouri plan and go into a lot of great detail on that. Tell folks where they can find that and where they can learn more about the work you're doing with Wall Builders.
At wallbuilders.com, on the website, if you'll just hit the search bar there and search for Missouri plan, this report will come up. We have put thousands and thousands of those original documents we own up online, and you'll have a blast going through and seeing documents from Patrick Henry and James Madison, or seeing documents from Black history or from Constitution history or judicial history or church history or whatever. We just have a plethora of information. People have a lot of fun just browsing around the website, but wallbuilders.com.
Well, appreciate your work on this and putting a spotlight on it. It's very important, something that folks really need to be paying attention to because you know, their rights are at stake and something that's going to be very important coming into the next year. Appreciate you and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for all you do.
Hey there, Texas Scorecard Radio listeners. Jim Graham from Texas Right to Life here. And I wanted to quickly hijack the show to remind you that every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. on the Empower Texans and Texas Right to Life Facebook pages, Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan and I will discuss all the latest news from around the state, country, and world. We don't always stay on topic, but when we do, we're delivering you the news and perspective you need to hold your elected officials accountable. Don't forget the Jim and Michael show every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. on the Empower Texans and Texas Right to Life Facebook pages.
Well, I hope you all had a blessed Easter this past weekend. In this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan meditates on the meaning of an empty tomb.
We just celebrated Easter, and I found myself thinking about the two competing sites in Israel that testify to the most pivotal event in human history. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. These sites vie for recognition as the location where Jesus of Nazareth was crucified, died, and was buried. One is the historic Church of the Holy Sepulchre, a shrine of Christianity since the 4th century. The other is the Garden Tomb, where the hillside looks like a skull as described in the Gospels, and intact Jewish tombs stand as a silent testimony to those events. Of course, only one can be the actual place where Jesus was crucified, died, and was buried, but both feel right. At the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you can stand with a long line of pilgrims dating back 2 millennia to Helena, the mother of the Roman Emperor Constantine. The emotion and the spiritual weight of the place are palatable. Yet the Garden Tomb is orderly and controlled, and almost supernatural silence grips the place as your hands touch the outline of tombs hewn from rock. It's refreshing and uplifting. In my mind, the two places are the same. They are, after all, less than a mile from each other. I'm content with the assumption that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is where it happened. I'm equally convinced the Garden Tomb is what it was like when it happened. In his wisdom, God did not leave us with an eternally lit neon sign. He knows the propensity of our fallen hearts to worship idols and things rather than him. If you go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre or you go to the Garden Tomb looking for Jesus, you'll be disappointed. The most uncomfortable truth is this. Whichever place was the place is an intellectually fascinating discussion, but is ultimately unfulfilling because it misses the bigger point. Remember, we're talking about looking at an empty tomb. As Mary Magdalene was told that first Easter morning, quote, "He is not here, for he has risen, as he said." One either believes that to be true or one does not. It cannot be partially true. There is no middle ground. As C.S. Lewis famously posited, Jesus' claims mean he was either a liar, a lunatic, or the Lord. Jesus' various claims about himself meant he could not be taken seriously as a good human teacher if he was lying about his divinity or was crazy. Was Jesus a liar? Was he a lunatic? Or was he the Lord? There is no body, just an empty tomb. These two places testify to one fact, and there is a single answer, and that answer matters. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary.
Well, that's all I have for you this week. Thanks for listening to the show. Make sure you never miss a story, not only by going to texasscorecard.com, but also subscribing to this show as a podcast available on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, all the podcasting platforms. Thanks for listening, and see you back here next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.